This is the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Global Star Radio Network, that's the place to be. That's our primary platform, our primary venue. Also broadcast, simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, BTR, and on YouTube Live, folks, 7 to 10 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. That's when we broadcast. We, right now, I think the last count, 114 or 116 different countries. Pastor Langford was heard, I think, yesterday, live in 112 countries. So, you know, we're getting the word out. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you to each one of you for your support, your prayers, your word of mouth, spreading the message. We are winning hearts and souls, one heart, one soul at a time. We are, I really believe we're making a difference. And the only way we can make that difference is through your support. Now, I'm not talking just financial support, although that's necessary. We have big plans, and we are instituting these plans. And I think you can see, folks, how our show is progressing. When I say progressing, of course, we're John Robertson, the producer, is going to be an in-house producer, which he works 24/7 now. We're going to try to squeeze a little bit more time and energy out of him. Instead of the 24/7, he's already working.
And, Dad, I was looking at the map here that you just referenced about the countries.
Yeah.
And it does change daily.
It does.
And I can almost count the, I can count the numbers that the countries that have not are, it looks like, the
Central
Ukraine
Africa.
And Central Africa. Every other country is represented. And that's amazing.
Yeah. And of course, when you say countries, the areas, for example, Central Africa, I think there's, a dozen and a half countries, maybe not. Or, I'm sorry, the Eurasia area up there, Asia and Europe. But nonetheless, we're getting the word out. And thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. We're actually getting mail from Western Europe, of course, which we have been getting, but much more. And people saying, you know what? I found a church, or you've caused us to look for and find churches, or you've awakened us to what's really going on behind the scenes. That makes us feel good. And as a matter of fact, I just want to say one more time, excuse me, the other day, when I brought my wife home from the hospital, I met a listener, Rosie. If you're listening, you really made my day. Just a delightful lady. Thank you so much for introducing yourself to me. I really appreciate that. If you're listening, just know how much that introduction meant to me.
And the interesting thing about that is within 7 days, you and me separately both ran into listeners of the show in the city we live. I ran into somebody at Country Fair, a gentleman who introduced himself.
Which is a convenience store up here, by the way.
Me and my wife were there, and that's just, you know, we get that a lot when we travel.
Yeah, and this is not to say, oh, how great we are.
No.
This is to say that we can make a difference. We, each one of us, if you're listening to this, you can make a difference, because we never thought we could, or at least not in this way. So, the calling by God, I believe, in doing His work and being obedient to Him, I think that's what this is all about. And just as long as we keep true to our foundation, and that's what we really need to do, and by doing so, we will keep true to each and every one of you listening and supporting us and praying for us and talking about us and whatever. So we're in this together. We are all in this together, no matter how you look at it. So I wanted to say that. And by the way, treat your dad to a steak this Father's Day. I got a package today. In between the post-operative stuff, my wife and I, we had the buddy system going on today. Well, between doctor's appointments and post-operative care and diagnostic stuff. Anyway, package came today from Omaha Steaks. Oh, my goodness. What a great... I was excited. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Jackie. I love steak. And I opened the package, of course, for Father's Day. Got my Father's Day gift. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how this Father's Day, for only $49.99, you can get our limited time Father's Day package when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter HH in the search bar to apply the savings. It's simple, but the Omaha steaks. They've got everything. They've got seafood. They've got bison. They've got poultry. They got, I mean, you name it, they've got it. It's fantastic. They have the highest quality cuts. It's got the one-of-a-kind flavor that only Omaha Steaks can bring. The ordering process, receiving it, it's convenient, it's fun. All beef is USDA inspected. It's aged for 21 days. So right now, folks, right now, Omaha Steaks is giving a limited time offer to our listeners for Father's Day, which is this Sunday. This is really an amazing deal. You're going to get 80% off. That's 80% off Omaha Steaks Father's Day package, which includes, and I'm going to list these items because you're not going to believe this, two tender filet mignons, two bold beefy top sirloins, four crispy chicken fried steaks, four juicy boneless pork chops, four all-beef Omaha steak burgers. They just melt in your mouth. They're so good. Four award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, 12 ounces of all-beef meatballs, 1 pound of steakhouse fries, four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, made-from-scratch, and they taste, they're just delicious. One Omaha Steaks seasoning packet, that really makes a difference. Plus, you're going to get four additional burgers free. That's right, free. Again, this is a limited time package. It's for only $49.99 when you go to omahasteaks.com, but you got to put HH in the search bar. Type HH in the search bar and add Father's Day package to your cart. Don't wait. This offer will end soon. Father's Day, it's coming here in a couple of days. Go to omahasteaks.com, type HH in the search bar. Grab your dad and fire up that grill.
We have a very interesting guest coming on now who sent us a book a while back, Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage, The Science and Threat of the Federal Reserve by Mickey Paoletta. I believe that's how you say it. And he's joining us now. And this book's very interesting. The very first page is a copy of an affidavit, and I don't want to jump in too much here, but he opens up in the next page talking about not wanting to seek to cause harm nor pose a threat to our judicial system. I do honestly feel that our judicial system is being manipulated by certain small group of dominant men who have unconstitutionally gained control over our system of finance. The affidavit hereby declares on the record that affidavit does not support a blanket statement that all judges, lawyers, sheriffs, politicians, and bankers are corrupt, but for the sake of simplicity, they all participate in our legal system, which has been diverted from actually upholding the law and our Constitution.
And that's from his hard copy book, Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage. Just very quickly, our guest, Mickey Paoletta, has worked with the Citizens Reform Center. He now works as an advocate for mortgages and people being ripped off by mortgage-backed securities and derivative mortgage bundling and repackaging. He testified before Congress. He worked with Ohio Congressman Jim Trafficant. He teaches banking to American citizens. He claims that the entire Vietnam War was to enrich the banking system. The more I learn about that, the more I believe. He claims that on the average foreclosure case, the presiding judge earns via pension fund about 15 grand per case. What you're about to hear, folks, is going to enrage you, but also inform you. It's really incredible. With that, let's
Mickey, thanks for
bring him on.
Thanks for sending us this book. I'm sorry it took so long for us to get back to you, but we're glad that you're here now. Again, the book Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thanks a lot, guys, for having me on. And I've been doing this now for 30 years. I have been fighting the banking system that I think that's the problem, and I fear the banking system more than I feel ISIS and all those other terrorist groups in the Middle East. I believe that the banking system, the way it is, has done more damage to our liberties than all the standing armies that could have ever done, and that includes Hitler, Mao Zedong, Stalin. As you can tell, I do not like the banking. I have studied them extensively. I have taught people that have called me on the phone in tears I can't go into court because I'm scared of the judge. I'm scared of the lawyers. I'm not that smart. And people, listen to me. This is our country. And if you're too afraid to get up and stand up for your rights and to protect your home, that it might be a little bit rude to say this, but maybe you shouldn't own your house. Maybe you should give your house up and pack up your plates and your dishes and get out of there. I'm not about to do that. And when you learn what's really going on, that, believe me, it's going to irate you to the fact that you can't wait to go into court and confront these criminals. That judge, and what we have to understand is that everybody in the foreclosure field, well, the first thing I hear, I hired a lawyer. And he told me that he's going to win my home. But people, listen to me close, okay? I've been doing this for 30 years. And I know people that have called lawyers. The couple that I know called the 63 to 65 lawyers. And do you know that not one lawyer would take their case? And I know a lady in San Francisco. I was just there, and I gave a speech there. And this lady paid two law firms $65,000, and she lost her home. There was another gentleman with his wife, had four kids. They paid a law group $75,000, $76,000, and they lost. What I say is that you could lose your house free, so why pay $70,000 to a lawyer that his main purpose is that he's representing the American bar, and that's not our friends. The American bar is registered on the United Nations agenda. They're a member of the United Nations. So what I say is that you study, and you study the law, you study the rules of evidence, you study the Uniform Commercial Code, and after you do that, you're going to start to realize that the study of law is not that difficult. I've been teaching that in my house. I live in Harrisburg, and I have a room downstairs that could hold 100 people, and there are days that we role play in court. I bring in six or seven jurists and the defendant, the bankers there, and we role play day after day after day. And guess what? That if you understand what you're doing, we have never lost a case. And I've been doing this for all these years, and I can honestly say that I have never lost a home because of a foreclosure suit.
Okay.
And what I contribute that to is that you have to educate, and if you educate and understand what you're doing, that's 60% of the battle.
Wow. Well, what I hear you saying, and I get a lot of, we collectively get a lot of emails here at the studio saying, mortgages, there's fraudulent stuff going on with mortgages. You really don't own your home, and on and on and on. And you actually note that courts, for example, are actually miniature banks and such. You make a lot of good points. And my words to Joe after reviewing your book, Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage, and reading some of your research, was simply this. If people really knew the truth, what you are teaching and speaking, there would be a revolution, or should be a revolution, because this is incredible stuff you're talking about here.
Well, let me explain that he said that.
Go ahead.
Henry Ford said that right around 1901, 1902. And I have studied Andrew Jackson for, several years. And what Jackson even said, if the American people would only know the true nature of banking, there would be a revolution before morning. that what I'm saying and what I've said in my book, if the American people only knew the true nature, that there should be a revolution right now. People, this is our country. This is our Constitution. It's the greatest form of government ever devised by man. And for us to stand by and allow the American bar and these crooked lawyers to lie, cheat, and steal our neighbors' homes, and we sit by, that's wrong. What we got to do is we got to get out of that. Thinking, and that we have to understand, it's not about I and me. It is about us and we. So the best way that we can protect our home is by protecting our neighbor's home. You have to join groups. You have to educate yourself. You have to do meetings in people's homes. I will go anywhere to talk. Where I was last week, my best friend and a cousin was killed in Vietnam, and last weekend it was exactly 50 years. So all the friends gathered up there at Paul's grave, and I haven't seen these guys in 40 and 50 years, and it was very, very moving to see all these guys 50 years after Paul was murdered. To get there together and see these guys get very, very emotional 50 years later. And it was very, very enlightening to me, and it gave me hope that the American people, that is up to us to save this country of ours, because your congressmen and your senators, they're not going to do it. 60-70% of them are lawyers. They're members of the American bar. And we got to get rid of the American bar. We got to get rid of them. We have to learn yes. to do this ourselves if we're going to win. And what I'm about to say about that forge and fraud, that we have a system now that I was going to email you guys, that we now have a system that we could take their promissory note and their mortgage note in the judicial states and the deed of trust states and insert this into our machinery, and within 5 minutes we can tell whether or not that those documents were cut and that were they just pasted from some digital name bank. And we've been doing this for several years. And the person that's heading up that division has been doing this for 40 years. And he signs in his affidavit that he is. Now, get this, people. He's never found an honest loan yet. All those documents that they go into court and they stand there and they say, Your Honor, we have the original notes in hand. First of all, they do not have the original notes, because when you go in and sign that original promissory note, the bank has no money to lend. The bank don't lend any money. What they do is monetize your promissory note, and they deposit that into the assets account of the banks, thus increasing their assets. And then they increase their liabilities, their DDA account, by the amount of the note. And when it comes time to close, the bank sits there and hands the seller of the home a check on their account. But people, that the money actually came out of your account. That's your money that you gave the bank, the promissory note. The bank monetizes that. And just look this up. And what that means is when a bank takes something that is not money, a promissory note, and only contains your signature, and they deposit that into the bank's assets account in the same way that they're going to take your cash for $1,000 and put it into the bank's account. There's no difference. That's your money. So then what happens, the bank withdraws that, they put it on their check head, and right in the front of you, they pay the seller for the house and the land, $252,000, let's just say. But what we don't see is, where did the bank get the money? In all the cases that we have filed, we've been going after the ledger accounts of the banks for probably 30 years. Do you know that the judges that protect that because if we would ever see the ledger accounts, that I have expert witnesses on my staff, but one of the guys has a master's degree of the University of Virginia. He's been in the work for banks, a major East Coast bank for 30 years, and he testifies that if the promissory note that funded the ledger account was ever produced. Now, I have a CPA that worked for PNC Bank, is willing to examine the ledger account, and he can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that note was illegally converted through monetization, and you actually own your house because the bank used the value of your promissory note to pay the seller. That house is really yours.
Okay, Mickey, I want to kind of draw this kind of back a little bit here, because some people might not really fully understand what the issues are, and that's partly our fault here. What we're talking about here is the fact that through your research, your investigation, and in your work product, which is manifested by your book, Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage, it's you are exposing the machinations of the court system of the banking system and the mortgage system,
right, weaponized banking,
of all of this. So those people just tuning in or not familiar with this topic, everything essentially with respect to the economy, courts, and mortgages, it's all built on fraudulent activity. I just kind of want to really drive that home. So when you're talking about mortgages, for example, are you talking about everyone's mortgage that we're all getting hosed? Is that what you're saying, or
let me make this perfectly clear, that my expert witness that does the forensic examinations is licensed by the federal government. He's been doing this for 43 years. He has never found one honest loan yet where that he has examined the signatures and where he can honestly go to court and say that signature is the true signature of the mortgagor or that's on that note.
Got
now
it.
Let me simplify that. Please, let me try it.
Okay.
If you go into a bank and you go in to the bank with cash, $150, and you walk up to the bank or the girl behind the booth there and say, please deposit this $150 into my checking account. What that girl is going to do is she's going to take that $150 in cash and she's going to debit the bank's assets account, which is going to increase the bank's assets. That's going to be a debit by $150. Now, they have to comply with GAAP. Assets equals liabilities plus net worth. That's the Federal Reserve's rule. And I normally do not mention Federal Reserve very much. But their books have to match. So what the bank is going to do is they're going to take that $150 and they have to increase their liability account, their demand deposit account, because they owe the depositor for his $150 deposit. And who is the depositor? The person that walked in and said, please deposit this into my checking account. that's your money, people, that you can spend that money anyway and at any time you want. That's your money. That's a demand deposit account. Any time that you hear a DDA, that these calls are in my book, what that represents is the depositor that gave the bank his cash, whether it's $150, that maybe it's his railroad job for $2,000 a week, whatever he's paid, that represents the depositor's money. So that you go into a bank and give the bank $100 and say, put this into your checking account, that we all know that that's our money, that we can make out the checks from our account up to $100 at any time that we want. But if we go over our limit or our $100 amount, then the bank is going to bounce that check and charge us $40 or $39, whatever they do. But Mickey, the main point to this, guys, we have to understand,
Mickey,
that
we're
that's
right up against
our
the break.
Money.
We're gonna pick up here on the other side. Folks, we're talking with Mickey Paoletta. He's the author of Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage, The Science and Threat of the Federal Reserve. He's going to be with us, so stay tuned. We're going to jump right back into this on the other side. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
There shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Erickson.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and the Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changecoastandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Thursday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Mickey Poeletta is our guest. He's the author of Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage, and we're going to get back to him in just a second. Just want to bring you a quick word from Greenovative. The folks at Greenovative tell us that the response from the Hagman and Hagman audience in the United States and Canada has been great. The new GMAG Complete Pack and the Complete with Barter Pack are still a big hit. We have negotiated with Alan Riggs for a good way to say thank you by offering a great discount. That's right, the H&H team got Mr. Riggs to agree to another 15% store-wide discount now through the 1st of July. You all know that Greenovative products make power anytime, anywhere, in any weather, day or night. They come with accessories to meet nearly any need during an emergency, and they are EMP proof. Remember, wherever you are, wherever you live, you need to be prepared. And there are many indicators throughout the world that tell us that disaster, whether man-made or natural, could happen at any time. You don't want to be without the essentials if we run into these problems. Folks, go to greenovative.com. That's www.greenovative.com and enter the discount code Hagman for your 15% store-wide discount. Again, greenovative.com, enter the discount code Hagman for 15% off store-wide discount now through the 1st of July. You will be glad that you did. Back to our guest. We're talking with Mickey Poeletta, his book, Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage. Mickey, right before the break, you were making a point talking about an example of somebody depositing $150 into the bank and how it increases both their assets and their liabilities. You want to continue with that thought?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, so what happens when you sign that note, that the promissory note, that is a negotiable instrument. It has value, face value, and so does your currency. If you go in and deposit $150, you have just deposited $150 or 150 negotiable instruments into that bank. So when you give the bank the promissory note, you have just given the bank a negotiable instrument for the same value that bond or the note states. And what that note says in paragraph one, that I promise to repay for a loan that I have received. Now, we're going to discuss that a little later, but the main point of this is this, that we have to get it clear that a negotiable instrument can be cash, it can be coins, it can be a bond, it could be a note, it could be a security, the instrument, it could be whatever the bank gets that carries your signature, an amount, a payable date due, and the date. What we have to understand, and it seems like it's so hard, but it's really not, just wrap your mind around this. When you gave the bank $150 in cash, is the same thing as going in and giving that bank a promissory note for $150. It carries the same value, and the bank is going to record a deposit of cash in the same fashion that they're going to record a promissory note. There's no difference. So if you give a bank $150, the first thing that we have to understand is that the bank is going to put that into the bank's assets account, and that's going to increase the debit account of the bank by $150. Now, let's take it one step more. You go in and you give the bank a promissory note for $150. The bank is going to take that $150 note and they're going to deposit that into the bank's assets account in the same fashion that they just deposited that $150 in cash. What we have to understand, that cash that you gave the bank has the same value as a $150 promissory note. Okay, now, but for their records to match, assets equals liabilities plus net worth, they have to increase their liabilities. And why a liability? Why a demand? Because that shows the bank who they owe that $150 cash to, and that liability shows that bank who is the person that deposited that $150 promissory note, and the bank owes the depositor $150 in cash or $150 in cash for the value of the promissory note. Joe, do you think I made that very clear?
That's clear, but somewhat frightening when you extrapolate that outward. Am I getting that right? Am I understanding? Go ahead.
What I'm saying is this. Now, I said it at the very, very beginning, and I say this in every speech that I do. I'm saying that the American banking system has done more damage to our freedoms and liberties than all of the combined armies of the last century could have done. Okay? When the Constitution of the United States makes it very clear that only Congress shall coin and regulate the value of money, not a private profit-seeking tax-exempt corporation known as the Federal Reserve. It's unconstitutional for the Federal Reserve to create money, that debt, and that is the biggest threat to our form of government than all the standing armies of the world.
All right, Mickey, okay, now hold that thought, because we have someone emailed a question here, and I think the question strikes directly at the heart of the understanding that you're trying to convey.
Okay.
And here's, okay, so help me and the listeners out, because we've got a tenuous understanding, but here's the question. This is from Tom. Thank you, Tom. It seems like common sense, but the money I deposit has to come from somewhere, which I agree with. So naturally, when I deposit the 100 or 150 into my account, it's my money, but only $100 or $150, correct? Does a bank create imaginary money for itself to deposit? And then a follow-up to that, because we did kind of graduate into this topic as well. Tom also asks, for example, don't I owe the bank, let's say, $30,000 if I purchase a house for $30,000 plus interest? Is the $30,000 invisible money that's just a transferable note? So I think that those two questions combined represent the intellectual question mark that we all have in the understanding of what you're trying to convey. And I think that's
fine.
Go ahead.
Yeah, those questions are very, very typical, and I get those just about every night, and I understand it because it's so hard for people to understand. It's so hard for honest people that we go to work and we bring home our that money, and they can't understand that how the banking system that can monetize our signature and create what is called money of account, money of exchange. Money of exchange is your dollar bills. But you're absolutely right. But when you go into a bank and when you sign that promissory note, and just like that paragraph in the original promissory note reads in paragraph one, I promise to repay for a loan of $30,000 that I have received. I am saying to you, sir, that if the bank lent you $30,000 of their money by decreasing their assets, and by decreasing their net worth account, then I would be suing you myself for a breach, and I would be trying to foreclose on you because the bank actually loaned you $30,000 of their money. But what I am saying to you, when you sign that promissory note, you are the one that actually created the $30,000 and gave it to the bank, and the bank owes you the $30,000. So when they paid the seller for your house, they went in and deducted from your account that you didn't even know was there, and withdrew $30,000 to pay the seller. My answer, if the bank actually loaned you $30,000, and all they got to do is produce their ledger accounts and let me examine them and see if they decreased their net worth account by $30,000 and not their liability account, then I would say, yes, that you must repay that bank back. But all the judges that protect that, I have been suing banks, and I work with lawyers all over the United States. And do you know that we have never forced a bank to produce their ledger accounts, because it would show one thing, that the bank has committed fraud and they have deposited the value of your negotiable instrument and used the value of your negotiable instrument as the only source of funding. So if the bank lent you their money, that I would be suing you. But if the banks can't prove that they are the ones that use their money and that they did not monetize your promissory note, then I would say that you got to be trained. And if anybody asks me on the witness stand, Mr. Paletta, did you receive a loan for $30,000 from a BOA? Based upon my information, understanding, knowledge, and information, and what I know without reviewing that ledger account, I can honestly say no. I never received a loan from Chase Bank.
So, Mickey,
because
what you're saying,
I know beyond a doubt I never received a loan.
So what you're saying is that the banks are not technically loaning out their money to somebody who's buying a house. You're saying that them signing the promissory note, that somehow they avoid having the liability, and that money is basically transferred from some kind of secretive account. It is how it comes out. But if we flip this around, could I just walk into a bank and hand them a promissory note with my signature on it and say I'd like $25,000 just based on that? I mean, in theory, just based on the promissory note. Wouldn't that be the same thing whether I used it for a house or expenses?
If the bank would accept that note for $25,000, then the answer is yes. You have created $25,000, and you are actually the lender, and the bank is the borrower. You're absolutely correct. And what we have to understand, that people, this banking fraud is diabolical. Okay? This system is so evil, and it's so hard to understand. But once you do understand it, it's so easy. I mean, I'm amazed that it took me a year and a half to figure it out. And I mean, I struggled for 12, 14, 16 hours a day, and I got three degrees, and I never understood how banks make money. But look, guys, you can go online and pull up a primer on money. That is PRIMER. That book was written in 1964 by the House of Representatives at Washington, D.C., and they explain in there on page 19 of the meaning of checkbook money. It will blow your mind. Now, you know, this is Congress now, but this is not Mickey Poletta. This is not anybody else but the United States House. And they give an example in there on page 19 that it says that this bank had two people coming in there with $50 a deposit. So the bank had a $100 in their assets along with their demand deposit account. John Jones comes along, applies for a $50 loan at the bank, and the loan is approved. Did the bank's assets that increase, or did the bank's the assets decrease that when they loaned John Jones the $50? This is Congress. This is not Mickey Poletta. You know, that's in my book. The bank's assets that increased by $50 and the bank's liabilities that increased by $50, that making the bank's assets $150 and making the liabilities, the demand deposit account, $150. But yet, if you and I were to make a loan, Joe, that our accounts would be subtracted. So if we had $100 and if you lent your father $50, that your accounts would only show $50. How does the bank make a loan and put it and put $50 into John Jones's account, thus increasing the bank's assets and the liabilities by $50? Because they monetized the debt obligation of the borrower. That's in every banking book. I got the 30 exhibits that we go in, and these books have been taught by Yale, Harvard, that you name it, and the one book that the next time that we're on, I'll send you guys these exhibits, where these exhibits are written by the ABA, the American bankers themselves, and where they say that when a bank makes a loan, the bank monetizes the debt obligation of the borrower and increase the bank's assets and liabilities by the amount of the alleged loan. And I'm not saying that. These college books are saying that, and some of these writers that actually worked for the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, they worked for the advisory board of the president's economic advisors. People, right. We have to wake up. They're stealing our land. They're stealing our homes, and they're foreclosing on probably. Over 8 million American homes have been lost because of this banking fraud. So if you're asking me if the American banking system is flawed, I'm going to tell you without a doubt in my mind the answer is yes. And until we understand it and stop it, our total aggregate debt, now understand this, our total aggregate debt is not 19.4 the way or 19.8. Our aggregate debt, the total debt, is well over $200 trillion, and the Federal Reserve's own stats that makes it clear there's only $1 trillion in circulation. But you don't have to be an Einstein to figure that out. How in the heck can we pay $200 trillion of debt with only $1 trillion in currency? And most of that currency happens to be in foreign government central banks.
Okay,
people,
Mickey,
that's the position that we're in.
I got a really basic question for you, okay? Just to be clear, this debt, whether the accepted $19.4 trillion or the $200 trillion, regardless of that number, you're saying that debt is dishonest debt. It's basically made-up debt. Is that correct?
Well, what do you mean by made-up debt? Is this Joe?
No, this is Doug, the old guy.
Oh, Doug.
The guy that's a, the guy that's got a thicker skull. the guy that's slow in the uptake. Well, I guess, okay, let me rephrase the question. Who do we owe this debt to?
We owe it to the commercial banks and the Federal Reserve. And some people are going to say that we owe the debt to ourselves. People, that's not even true. We owe it to the owners of the commercial banks. And they're ready to foreclose on us. And I think that we're sick and tired of every 8-9 years that there's ups and downs. And aren't we tired of that by now? They've been playing that same game with us now. Since the Federal Reserve. When the Federal Reserve was passed in 1913, that we were guaranteed that we're going to straighten out and everything's going to be stable.
Hey, what happened with that 99-year charter? The 99 charter came
away. What's that?
The Federal Reserve charter, wasn't that originally a 99-year charter?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
No. What it is now, I like to go back, and let's go back into 1791, that we had the first central bank of the United States, and Hamilton, proposed that Madison and Jefferson went to Washington and they pleaded with them, do not give us a central bank. And I got a great big paper written on that now. It's about 150-page brief, and I think that it explains it. But I'm going to make it really simple. Is that the central bank, that first central bank that Hamilton got, that was created in 1791, and it was supposed to expire, in 1811. But what happened in 1812? The War of 1812. And why do you think that war was fought? That because the first central bank that Hamilton created was owned 80% by the Bank of England, not by America, not by Americans, not by the United States, the government, but it was owned by the Bank of England. So, but you must ask yourself, were we really free? And I'm going to take that one step more. Are we ever free? So what happened then that bank was expired. Madison did not renew it. So in 1812, Great Britain started a war. And go back in the history books and find out the reason. I still can't find a logical reason, but they said that they were taking our men off of the ships and forcing them into the English Navy to fight France. Don't believe it. Madison, that reluctantly agreed for the second central bank in 1836, and that was supposed to expire. No, I'm sorry. In 1816, and it was supposed to expire in 1836. But keep this in mind: 20 years for both banks. That was their charter. 20 years. But Jackson, he comes along, and he says, "I'm opposed to central banking, and I'm not going to renew the charter of the second bank of the United States." And for all you guys, do you know where the second bank of the United States was? It is located right next door, and it touches the ground of Independence Hall in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Now, that bank there, now that was gone. Jackson now didn't renew that. And then what happened? The Civil War came, and the Civil War everybody thought was about slavery. No, But Lincoln made it very, very clear that Lincoln said this, that if I could free all the slaves and avoid the Civil War, that's what I would do. That if I could free the slaves in 50% of the slave states and have the other ones free, but to avoid the Civil War, that's what I would do. That Lincoln made it very, very clear that it wasn't about slavery. But although Lincoln was against it, but what we got to understand, that to understand of the banking laws, you have to study the exception law, and there's three major laws that they got through with Lincoln, and had Lincoln lived, they would have never passed the exception clause. And we're not going to get into that at this time. But what happened now, the Federal Reserve that came into existence, and it passed in 1913, and that was supposed to expire in 1933. What happened, everybody, in 1929?
Well, hold that thought, Nick. We're up against the break. So you're saying the Federal Reserve had initially a 20-year charter from 1913 to 1933, but we ran into the Great Depression before that. We're going to pick up right there. On the other side, folks, you're listening to this edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. Our guest is Mickey Pelletta, Universal Bankruptcy and Economic Bondage. We'll be right back.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.